Mubarak.
You mean Eid Mubarak?
No, I mean Eid Mubarak.
You mean Eid Mubarak. Eid.
Happy end of Ramadan.
Tabrik migam.
And I'm excited to eat again.
Food.
Food is good. Food is good. Welcome to the Good Muslim, Bad Muslim podcast.
Happy Pride.
We are celebrating Eid. We're celebrating Pride. We're celebrating the World Cup. We're celebrating summer solstice. We're celebrating Juneteenth.
We're celebrating our birthdays.
We're celebrating our birthdays. Happy birthday.
Happy birthday.
We're also celebrating a guest. We have a guest on our show. We have Saher Pirzada. You might know her from her work with Heart Women and Girls, as well as her work with Vigilant Love, and just a dope LA activist. Welcome.
Woohoo! Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being on our show.
Excited to be here.
I kind of freaked out also because I feel like this is me being on Ellen. And it's like, you know, something that people look forward to in their life. Like, oh, when am I going to get the opportunity to do this?
Oh, my gosh. I feel like we should have made you A, dance, and B, we should give you a basket of goodies the way Ellen does. And we don't have that. Sorry.
But we still can make you dance.
I would love to do that. And I will do it in the corner afterwards.
You and I met through your work with CARE.
Yeah.
Which is really exciting. I remember when you moved to L.A., you had just come from overseas.
Singapore.
You were there for years and years.
Yeah, about 3 years. I was basically like, I don't know anyone in Los Angeles. And I had a list of people that I wanted to connect with. And you were pretty much at the top. And I was like, let me just cold call all these people and email them and see if they want to get coffee with me. And this is when you were accessible and was super nice.
I'm always accessible.
Yeah, and we got coffee at Nature's Brew. And you gave me kind of the lowdown of the Muslim community.
I know, I definitely did. I was like, I was just so tired of working with young Muslim activists that like work only for a couple of years and then they leave. And so I just really like wanted you not to leave. I was like, okay, this is leadership development, mentorship, whatever. We're going to like keep you here because I need good people to do good organizing with. And it worked because you've been in LA for a long time and you're doing such amazing work. I'm so proud of the work you're doing with Vigilant Love.
Thank you.
Do you want to tell everyone what it is? We talk about Vigilant Love all the time on Good Muslim, Bad Muslim, but do you want to share?
Sure. So we are a arts and healing-based nonprofit that's doing anti-Islamophobia organizing in Los Angeles. And really, we started around December 2015, when the San Bernardino shooting happened, and the Japanese American community reached out to the Muslim community and said, we want to stand in solidarity with you all. And so there was just so much momentum and so much coming from various people who were like, we need to keep this going. And so we did. And we're still here. And we're still doing awesome stuff.
And I keep getting pulled into rallies and everything. And I'm, am I an advisory board?
You're a steering committee member.
Yeah, I'm a steering committee member.
Yeah.
It's just too many to keep track.
And we were on a panel together this past week.
It was only 2 days ago and it feels like it was like
such a long week.
Yeah.
The movie 15 Years Later just came out, which we'll talk about a little bit later.
Yeah.
We're excited to have you on our show.
Thanks for having me. It really, really does mean a lot.
Aww.
Yay.
So we just finished Eid for my family. We went to the Rancho Cucamonga Mosque and they had inflatable things all around the outside of the mosque for the kids to play with. I don't know.
That's so cool.
It was pretty cool. Yeah.
They didn't do that when
I was a kid.
What?
That's
There's
what I was
bounce houses?
They had bounce houses. They didn't just have one bounce house. They had like six or seven of them.
It's like a festival. It's like a carnival type thing, right?
Yeah, it was totally a carnival. But the thing is, like when I was a kid of that age, we just had to go to the Fairplex and we were lucky if there was Dunkin' Donuts. Not even Dunkin' Donuts. Winchell Donuts. Outside. And these kids have cotton candy machines.
What?
Popcorn.
They have popcorn.
What?
Yeah. Krispy Kreme donuts was the thing.
Yeah, Krispy Kreme. My dad was like, desserts are a tool of the West. I have desserts.
You can have it now if you're a kid at Eid prayer.
And a bounce house.
And a bounce house. I was very jealous.
Sarah, what did they do for you when you had Eid?
So for me, I mean, I was up in the Bay Area for Eid. And we do our Eid prayers in this city called Saratoga in an empty Macy's.
What?
So in the mall, there's like this deserted old mall.
And what?
We basically take it over in the empty Macy's and we pray in Macy's.
Do they have to pay for it? They must have to pay something.
I feel like they do, but it's probably not much because it's been empty for years.
Oh my gosh.
But it's so brilliant because you have like the mall parking.
Yeah.
And then there's like, so I'm always like in the customer service area praying my Eid prayers every year.
That's amazing. Yeah. I'm used to praying at the Fairplex, which is this huge convention center, but they stopped doing it there in Southern California. Well, my dad says it's because it costs too much money, but I think there's like mosque politics involved in whatever. Like,
so all the mosques just do it individually at their own mosques?
Now they do it individually in Southern California. But for a time, I think at least 8 of them got together and would go in together. And it was huge. It was awesome because you would see everyone from all across Southern California. But now everyone, well, I mean, I guess they're able to spend the money on bounce houses, which is what's happening.
And cotton candy machines.
Cotton candy machines. I know.
We had a bounce house at my in-law's place for our Eid party.
What?
Yeah. And then all of the adults went in at one point. And then the sprinklers went on. And what? all of the kids were panicking. We had to, like, rescue them from the bounce house. It was great.
Another thing that the kids these days have is we did a Vigilant Love Iftar. And we got balloons from Party City, which were Ramadan balloons. And they had the, like, moon on it. And then they had a mosque on it and said Ramadan.
They sold them at Party City?
They sold them at Party City.
What?
I know.
Oh, that's a creeping Sharia right there. Look at that.
Yeah, these Muslim kids don't know.
And then for the fancy folks, Crate and Barrel.
Crate and Barrel had what?
Crate and Barrel had Ramadan decorations. Get out. And Eid decorations. It's like a thing now. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
I know.
Okay, so you and Saqib were posting on my Facebook wall about Muslim Christmas being Eid, which I disagree with because I'm looking at Sahar for support. Be on my side. Be on my side.
I don't know what you're going to say yet. So I don't know if I'm on your side yet.
This is like an ongoing battle on good Muslim, bad Muslim. Because for Iranian Shia Muslims, Eid al-Fitr is not as big of a celebration as Nowruz. So then when everyone is like, it's like our Christmas, it's like our Christmas. I'm like, no, my Christmas is springtime, the spring equinox.
So what's your New Year's?
That's the New Year.
Yeah.
Then it can't be Christmas.
So then how?
That's my whole point, is that the whole European Western model is stupid, where you have, like, you know, New Year's is in the middle of the winter. Doesn't make any sense. And then you have, like, Christmas celebration. You have Jesus's wrong birthday.
No, my argument is that Nowruz is your New Year. And Bangladeshis, we have New Year's, too. And so we also have, like, a celebration of seasons. We have six seasons in Bangladeshi culture. And I was saying that ethnic celebrations are different than religious celebrations, which is why you have two Christmases.
Okay, but here's my argument back to that. I hate the way that people who celebrate Christmas want everyone to have a Christmas.
Yeah.
Like, let it go.
I'm not letting Christmas go.
Christmas is amazing.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
I'm have so much Christmas envy every year.
I'm literally writing a Christmas movie, so you can't take that from me.
Look, I get two Christmas trees.
I didn't get Christmas trees.
We put up Christmas lights.
Nope.
There's a Yule log.
You just are so lucky you don't know.
If you've never had it.
Yeah.
Is like, that what it is? I have Christmas privilege.
Yeah. That's what it is.
Interesting.
Did you all exchange gifts for Eid?
No. Okay, so here's what's funny. I called my mom up to be like, okay, well, maybe I'm the second generation. Yeah. Like, maybe. And I was like, hey. And my mom was like, oh, hey. So are you coming to the party? And I was like, oh, we are celebrating. Yeah. It's a party for commencement. And then, like, 5 minutes later, she was like, oh, yeah. And we could just celebrate Eid at the commencement.
So no gifts.
No gifts.
I got a lot of Eidy.
You got Eidy? Oh, that's because you're still young.
Also, it's strategic on my part why I go to the Bay Area, because all of my, like, older aunties still think of me as a child, so they give me Eidy. And it's, not cheap. Like, they give me a lot of Eidy.
I only got, like, two $5 bills for Eidy, and I felt like I had to pay it forward to the other kids.
Oh, no.
But it sounds like you banked a lot.
I also am super cheap and did not give Eidy out, because I was like, I'm technically still a student in grad school.
Whatever, you're married. I know. Like, once you're married, you're supposed to, like...
I gave gifts to, like, our immediate family's kids, like my nephews and nieces.
Oh, that's cute.
So I, like, went to Target and spent a lot of time trying to figure out their gifts. And then I, like, bring it home, give it to them, and my nephew's like, oh, I already have this. It's like, well, you're not getting any Eid gifts ever again.
My Eid this year also fell during Father's Day. So I ended up actually spending 3 days weeding my dad's yard. and I put in a lot of money into it. And then I didn't get him a gift. And then I was like, I was asking my sister, I was like, does that count? That counts as a gift, right? I don't know if it does.
I'm dead. I lost my voice laughing at the sight of Taz weeding her father's yard on aid.
Did you wear like a sun hat and like go out with like?
I was just so annoyed that it looked so dirty that I was just like, no, I'm going to clean up my dad's yard. It cannot look like this. And then it took 3 days.
The shade weeding.
Yeah. But it looks nice now.
Oh, yeah.
Did he appreciate it? Maybe if he's like, wow, that meant a lot to me, then it could count. No. Like, you don't get to decide.
I don't think he appreciated it. But he did come out on Father's Day. On Sunday, I spent the most time there. And then he saw me cleaning up the yard. And then he came out to help me.
Bonding activity.
Yeah. So maybe that was it. That was the gift.
I feel like that's a father thing.
Right?
Because I remember there was this one time we had this bush in our house that my mom hated. It was like red and it got all over the cars. And so me and all the kids on the block got together one time and we took it out. Mm-hmm. And my dad was so pissed. And I think it's because it's like, that's the dad job.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You're undermining.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I trimmed the rose bush and then he went and trimmed it again. And then he did a bad job. And then I went and did it again with a better job. Anyway, so that was my Eid weekend. But, you know, whatever. It was like you said, it was a bonding experience. And I feel like I made the yard look better and I felt good about it.
I wanted to celebrate. I felt this like internal pull to like look up at the sky and celebrate. And I was just like, where is this coming from? And I was like, oh, yeah, it's Eid.
Yeah.
And I want to celebrate. I just want to celebrate. So then I got my dog and I took him to the dog beach.
How was it? It was hot that day.
It was beautiful here. We went to like Rosie's dog beach in Long Beach, which is a gorgeous dog beach. And he had an amazing time. He hates sand and the ocean.
Did you know that before you took him?
Of course not. He totally loves the beach, just doesn't like the sand and doesn't like the ocean.
So what is the beach if it's not the sand and the ocean?
I was going to ask the same question.
Other dogs. Oh. There are other dogs, and that's about all he likes.
So when you say he doesn't like the sand, does he like tiptoe on the sand, or what's he doing on the sand?
Well, it's tough for him because he has that poodle-y, like he's a poodle mix. And so it was just like the wind was blowing in his face, and he was like, what is going on? And then his whole coat was getting covered in sand, and he was like, what is going on? And there are like, there's this big wide ocean, and there are all these big labs like leaping in it and loving it. But he is a tiny dog, and he's like, why is this water slapping me in the face? But I want to be friends with these big dogs.
Oh, you're a poor dog.
He was adorable.
The imagery is just like adorable, though. Like, I wish I were there to see this happen.
I'm sure it's on Wookiee's Instagram feed.
You can follow Wookiee on Instagram at WookieGramsLA.
Okay, I'm going to do it. Anytime you post pictures of your dog, I'm always like, oh, squishable.
He's so cute.
Squishable, like cuteness, aggression.
He did a not so cute thing that was the other half of my aid, which is that he saw my pincushion that I use for crocheting and he was like, chew toy. Yay. Yeah. And then I thought that he may have eaten a needle. And then we were like, it's going to be so expensive. Are we being assholes? Are we being cheap parents? We're horrible. We're horrible people. Should we get him an x-ray? Oh my God. It was so stressful. And then the next morning he did vomit. And we were like, he's dying. And it's our fault because we were cheap. And it's aid. You're supposed to pass it forward. You're supposed to be generous. And this is my dog. This is my baby. I'm a horrible person.
Then what happened?
Did he vomit a needle?
No, we took him to the vet. They took an x-ray. It cost $300 the whole thing. And then the vet was like, oh, no, he didn't.
Oh, my gosh.
Well.
Oh, my goodness.
You know, I applaud you for taking that step to find out if your dog was okay.
Thank you.
Something else we're celebrating now, which crossed over with Eid, is the World Cup that just happened.
Dun, 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 Iran.
Wait, isn't it still happening?
It's still happening.
Not like done.
I actually haven't been following because it's like at 5 a.m. and that's way too early. The only time that I followed was when I was at my dad's house and my sisters were there and it like crossed over with Sahur time. And so like we did Sahur and then they like just stayed up to watch the game. But I was still, even for that, I was still sleepy. I just kind of heard it through my head.
We had it playing at like all of the Eid parties that we had. There was always just like the World Cup playing in the background. But nobody was really watching it. It was just on.
Same.
I was like, okay.
This is one of the things I miss about not living in Berkeley. So in Berkeley, across the street from us, there was like a pizza place where everybody would watch.
Yeah.
And the International House, the I House, like everyone from there would come down. And it was like the World Cup, like everyone watching. And it was so great.
I totally remember, was it 4 or 8 years ago, where we were getting up at like 4 in the morning to go watch games at a local bar. But maybe I'm just not friends with those kinds of people anymore.
Well, clearly, because none of us are watching it.
I watch it on Instagram now.
You know what I am watching is how hot these men are, though. I felt like I broke a fast, but then I watched it after the sun went down, so my fast was solid. But the picture of the Iranian men, oh my goodness, so hot. Did you see the picture of them in the blue suit? Are you two not saying anything because you have husbands? Is that what's happening?
No, I mean, I want to sit on all their faces. They're gorgeous, gorgeous men. And listening to them speak in Farsi was just like, oh.
What did they say?
They said Junam.
What's that?
Means, I don't know how to explain Junam. Because like,
don't look at me. I don't know Farsi.
I know. I was like, why are you looking at
Isn't it also in Urdu?
Like Janam? Like,
yeah, same
like
thing.
Like my love.
Yeah, or, yeah,
yeah. Oh. It's like a term
it's
of
like
endearment.
John.
Yeah, John, yeah.
Yeah, John, and we say June also. But like when, if somebody's like hitting on you for some, for example, they'll say like, June.
Should I not look at you while you say it?
Okay, my voice is shot, so I can't do it justice. Also, I feel like every Persian guy out there, you know, the one Persian guy that listens to this podcast.
Yeah, I don't think we have a lot of them listening.
is going to be like, that's not how I hit on women, you asshole.
But let's now just, you have to do it. We have to
now
do what
now
it
I
is.
Don't know what you have to say it.
Can we play a clip?
خیلی تلاش کردیم واقعا از جون دلمون تلاش کردیم که مردمی که اومده بودن اینجا خوشحال برن خونه‌هاشون شرمنده ولی ما واقعا همه وجودمون رو گذاشتیم.
And there's this amazing article that Elle put out called The Definitive List of the 65 Hottest Footballers You Should Root For at the World Cup, which is a very important article that I think we must all look at. And there are lots of men on this list to look at.
Yeah, I'm just scrolling.
There's 65.
For purposes of research.
This is totally research.
It's just necessary.
Absolutely necessary.
And me scrolling with my two fingers is not at all adding to the experience in any way.
I'm going to shout out Ahmed Khalil of Tunisia. I think that's a Muslim name. Sounds Muslim.
I don't see their names. I just see
photos.
Beautiful pictures.
We're all going to need a little moment.
Yeah.
Climb on board. We'll go slow and high tempo. Light and
their beards. It's like I can't tell who's Muslim and who's not because a lot of them have facial hair. That's also really nice.
I know. And they're very brown and tan because they're probably out in the sun. And you just don't know.
I mean, yeah, I think it's also like there's Muslims probably on all of the teams, including the ones that are from Europe, right?
That's what I heard. I think it's true. This is the creeping Sharia. This is the Muslimification of Europe through football.
Or soccer. Depending on who you ask.
I mean, if any of these guys want to be a guest on our show, they're welcome to come by.
Yeah, or just come by my house.
Okay, you know what's more exciting for me than the actual games is I am really excited that like the official song for the World Cup is with Jason Derulo and this Pakistani singer.
Yeah.
And she's amazing. She's literally one of my favorite Pakistani singers.
What's her name?
Gurthal Ain Baloch. We call her QB for short.
QB.
And she's super stylish and super badass. And she's singing the official World Cup song.
They do always find like a pop singer to sing these songs each year.
Yeah.
I didn't realize this was the official one.
I mean, yeah. So this is like Coca-Cola's official World Cup song. So it's like sponsored
by
Coke.
Goes hand in hand.
Talk about a creeping Sharia.
But it's so good. And she's so awesome in it. And she's like speaking in like Urdu and Punjabi.
Yeah.
Like, it is creeping Sharia for sure.
I also love the Iranian team's coach.
Yeah, why?
Oh my God, listen to this gorgeous speech he gave. He says, "I've never, in all my career, seen players deliver so much after receiving so little as I have with these Iran boys. We struggle to travel, to have training camps, to bring opponents, to buy equipment. Even buying shirts is a challenge. But these challenges helped me fall in love with Iran. These difficulties became a source of inspiration to the people. It makes them more united to fight for their country. These boys deserve a smile from the rest of the world."
I'll give them more than a smile.
I was going to say, yo, coach. Coach Carlos Queiroz said that. It's so beautiful. It's
super beautiful. I think about that a lot, actually, about a lot of the Muslim teams that are playing. There's seven Muslim countries that are playing in the World Cup. They are Saudi Arabia, Egypt, Iran, Senegal, Nigeria, Tunisia, and Morocco. And I don't think many of them have a chance of making it to the end, from what I understand of what I've read. But, you know, they're all coming from countries which sound like they're on Trump's ban list. So,
I mean, it's a big deal.
Yeah, it's super big deal.
This was also the first year that Iranian women were allowed into the stadium in Iran.
Oh my gosh,
yeah,
that
to watch.
Amazing.
And then we lost.
Oh.
Oof. But it was such a good game. It was a great
game. Did you watch it?
No, not at all. I saw all the posts afterwards. Okay, here's how little, like, I hear Eid celebrated. Eid al-Fitr. This is so bad. I feel like every Iranian is going to be like, quit de-Musliming us. That never happens. But anyway, the people next door to me are Iranian also. And when I walked out, they ran out. And I said, "Happy Eid," at the same time as he goes, "Did you watch the game?"
Celebration all around.
Yeah.
Team Melli.
Woo. So we have to talk about something really bad that just happened.
And it continues to happen.
I don't want to talk about it.
With President Asshat.
And, oh my gosh, everything that's happening at the border is breaking my heart. The fact that they have, what are they calling them, tender facilities?
Tender age.
For newborns, to take newborns away from their parents. Like, all of this, it just sounds terrible. The way that I understand how the policy is being played out is that the current administration is splitting up parents from their kids as a form of kidnapping, because that's what that is. When you steal kids, that's kidnapping. Because they want the Democrats to push for particular policies, and that's the ransom. So basically, we're in this, like, national kidnapping ransom thing that's happening right now, and it is heartbreaking. It is absolutely heartbreaking.
What is the policy that they want the Democrats to roll over on?
You know, wall at the border, like, everything.
Oh, my God, that's disgusting.
And it's just, like, we're pushing the moral compass more and more to the right so that the compromise is still to the right.
I'm just checking. He's still president, right?
Yeah. Yeah, he is still president.
Like, one of our presidents got impeached for a cum stain. Remember that?
Then how come Trump hasn't been impeached yet?
Exactly.
How do you do that? Do you have to, like, file something for it to go through where then he would then go to trial for getting impeached?
So Congress is who can initiate the impeachment process. And we know that Congress just really is trying to get all their laws to pass through right now. So they're kind of waiting it out as long as possible. But this just, it's so bad right now. So terrible. The other thing is that even though Trump signed an executive order a couple of days ago that was saying that he's not going to split the family up, there's already a ton of kids that are in these camps. These kids are in their camps. They don't know their parents' names. They don't have the paperwork. How are they going to find these people? Some of the kids are, like, being flown to New York right now. They're being flown to other parts of the country, taking them even further away.
Montana, Michigan.
It's an enormous logistics mess. I think we're definitely going to be losing kids through this process.
These are internment camps.
Exactly. But they're worse than internment camps because, I mean, George Takei just shared this article about how even when he went to the internment camps, he wasn't taken away from his parents. He still had access to his parents. And so these kids are in an internment camp where they don't even have access to their parents.
It's horrifying. I mean, I also read somewhere that they're being put into, like, the foster care system for some of them. So it's not like this is, like, a temporary thing that they're thinking about.
Of course, yeah.
Right? Like, it's intentionally that they're separating the families. And I don't know what else needs to happen for Congress to act.
Well, I think all the Democrats have acted. It's in the hands of the Republicans, and the Republicans aren't acting. So you, as voters, have to be making your calls.
Every day, every morning. I saw a lot of posts on social media from just, like, influencers and celebrities being like, this isn't America. This isn't the America we know.
Which is so frustrating.
Huh? Like, oh, did you not read history books.
Well, and then on Juneteenth, then we lose Antoine Rose. Yeah. He gets shot in the back. 17-year-old kid gets shot in the back on Juneteenth.
In Pittsburgh, by a police officer who's only like 3 hours outside of becoming officially a policeman.
I mean, the officer that was sworn in only 3 hours before, I didn't read anything about what happened to him.
I'm sure nothing happened to him, if I have to take a guess.
Yeah. I mean, that's another question that people are posing is for the law enforcement officers that are enacting, you know, family separation and removing children from their parents. Mm-hmm. Like, stop following orders.
Yeah, stop following orders. I'm a little torn about that because I think the thing that I'm torn about isn't the officers. I'm torn about the people that are taking care of these kids. Like, mm-hmm. I don't want people who are in charge of feeding these children to not feed them. Like, I don't want them to boycott, but I want the people who are stealing the kids to boycott.
Well, there was one guy who did just that.
Mm-hmm. But I definitely don't want everyone to walk out en masse because they're children. They need help. They need to be taken care of.
Or go back to their parents.
Yeah, but I don't have any confidence that our government will know how to do that.
Mm-hmm. Well, what are the checks and balances on ICE? There are none.
There are none.
There's no executive branch that exists right now that is a segment of the government to put checks on ICE.
There's no checks, but they are humans, and we could implore that they see their humanity.
Yeah. I feel like that ship sailed for me a long time ago.
I know, but, you know, like, until they quit, they are taking care of kids. Mm-hmm. And I don't want people to run out on these kids and leave even worse people to take care of them and abuse them.
But that leads to the other gross part about this is then now all of these white women are talking about, oh, I want to adopt them.
Yeah, I know.
Wait. I missed this. What?
I'm not surprised that came out.
That's a whole other thing. Oh, I want to love on them. Oh, I want to adopt them. Oh, I want to take care of them. And it's like, no, send them back to their parents. Why are you dismantling these families?
Yeah. And,
I mean, that's what it is.
Yeah, of course.
There to do. The whole fetishization of transracial adoption, like mm-hmm. we're seeing all of it play out. And this is America. This has been America. Fix it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Get on board. Quit with your I'm gonna love on these babies and adopt them weird crap. Ugh.
Ugh.
Stop destroying other countries.
Stop destroying this country.
Stop destroying the world.
Yeah.
And on that note, let's take a break. Zara, you know how I travel a lot?
Mm-hmm.
But what you may not know is that if you see me at an airport or out traveling, I'm usually the girl with a plug in my hand looking for an outlet.
I hate that.
But with a way carry-on suitcase, I'm no longer going to look like the wild auntie always looking for an outlet. There's a little battery underneath the handle that you can charge all of your electronics on. And a single charge of the away carry-on can charge your phone 5 times. The battery is also easily removable if you decide to check in your bag, and you can just throw the battery into your purse.
What?
I got the carry-on suitcase in the color blush, and the suitcase is super lightweight. They're made of premium German polycarbonate, unrivaled in strength and impact resistance, because apparently that's what Germans are known for. The suitcase has 360-degree spinner wheels, which makes it really fun to race through the airport with, especially when I'm late. And there's a TSA-approved combination lock built into the top of the bag to prevent theft. Just don't forget the combo.
How do I get one?
For $20 off a suitcase, visit awaytravel.com/good and use the promo code GOOD during checkout. Once again, visit awaytravel.com/good and use the promo code GOOD for $20 off.
Ayo, Ferg.
Yeah.
Ride with Minaj. Mashallah. Check in with me. Pin to your job.
Now I can't say mashallah without saying mashallah. Now I gotta say it the Minaj way. The This is my Creeping Sharia. So this song is a remix of the ASAP Ferg song Plain Jane. So in that song, he goes ride with the mob, something hamdulillah or alhamdulillah. And then Nicki Minaj's remix is something Minaj, mashallah. I was listening to the radio a lot during Ramadan when I was driving around. These songs would come on and I'd be like, hey, Creeping Sharia, we're everywhere. Now we have 2 songs that we can reference, mashallah and hamdulillah.
Well, I was going to say the Sweatshop Boys one too.
Yeah, and then the Sweatshop Boys one, which you were just talking about. What's the lyric for that one?
Inshallah, mashallah. Hopefully no mashallah.
And when Vigilant Love went to the airport,
LAX,
you turned that into a chant, which was really awesome.
It's so fitting, unfortunately.
Super fitting. Yeah. The kind of other extra layer on my Creeping Sharia is that Nicki Minaj is on the cover of Elle magazine, and she's wearing a hijab. So, you know, she's singing about mashallah, she's wearing hijab, she's Muslim.
Boom, we got Nicki Minaj.
Nicki Minaj, one of ours.
Speaking of teams, Team Queer.
Team Queer.
Woo, pride. All right, this is a creeping queer Muslim. At the Pride Parade in Los Angeles, for the first time, they had a Muslim float.
Which is amazing.
Which was put together by folks at Muslims for Progressive Values. And people were fasting and marching in pride. Our friend Rami Eletrebi wrote a poem about it.
I didn't see it, but I did talk to Rami before he went. He was talking about how he's fasting and he was unsure of how he was going to feel marching in the parade. And it was also, he was talking about how that night he was going to go to Lailatul Qadr and pray. And I saw his social media post afterwards and he was talking about how whole he felt being a part of this experience, and it was just so beautiful. I'm so happy that happened. I was asking around to see if there had been other Muslim floats at other prides, and I think there might have been one in New York, and maybe other cities have them. If you have them in your city, let us know. This was definitely the first time LA has had one.
And you got to see a photo.
I got to see some photos on either Instagram or Facebook, and it was really beautiful. People had written messages on the float. And one of my friends had put the word hub, which means like love in Arabic, script. Yeah, so it was really, really nice.
Love is love is love.
That's a good creeping Sharia.
So my creeping Sharia is I was with a friend last night, and I do work with Heart where we talk a lot about sexual violence. Mm-hmm. And they were reflecting on how when you're working with trauma survivors and you are like wrapping up your day, you've like absorbed all of that trauma into your body. And so how for them, their therapist told them that at the end of the day, make sure you wash the top of your head and your neck and your ears and the bottom of your feet. And for me, I was like, oh, so basically you make wudu, like you make our like Muslim ritual cleansing to like cleanse your body.
Wait, were they Muslim?
They weren't.
They weren't Muslim?
No.
Look at that.
And I was like, oh, there's some wisdom in what we do.
Yeah, they say prayer is yoga. So,
oh,
you know,
that's like a whole thing. Actually, part of Heart, we have a training that talks about how you can incorporate mindfulness, quote unquote, into your prayer, like your salah. Yeah. How do you like breathe and what are touch points and like depending on what posture you're in, what it actually does for you in terms of anxiety.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So that's my creeping Sharia.
That's a good creeping Sharia.
I think it's also really powerful to know that what I do for prayer and ritual cleansing is like working in my field of kind of working with trauma survivors.
Yeah, that is actually pretty powerful. It's good to know that you're finding the healing that you were already practicing is actually healing outside of your practice.
Yeah, yeah.
So why don't you tell the listeners a little bit more about what Heart is?
So Heart is a virtual national nonprofit, and we do health education, advocacy, research, and training around sexual health and sexual violence in the Muslim community.
And I think we've given Heart awards in the past. Yeah, we're a huge fan of Heart.
Yeah, I was listening to your last episode when you were talking about how Ramadan is sometimes really challenging for folks.
Yeah.
And how every time Ramadan comes around, people are on this like spiritual high. And we had a campaign for Ramadan, which was #MyRamadanIs, where the whole purpose was to talk about like, what are the actual struggles we have during the month?
Yeah, I did not have a Ramadan high this year.
Me either. There's so much sadness and trauma.
Sad. I'm very excited that you are on staff at Heart and so excited about the work that Heart does.
And so check us out on Facebook, Instagram. We're at Heart to Grow. We're also on Twitter.
And what kind of resources can people get from Heart?
We have a lot of fact sheets around like myths and facts around sexual violence in the Muslim community, sexual assault. We do have guides for parents to learn how to talk to their children about both sexual health and sexual violence. We do have like a power and control wheel that we just launched around sexual assault in the Muslim community and research reports on gendered Islamophobia as well. So lots and lots of great publications on our website. And we also have a virtual educator platform. So That's if anyone awesome. Has questions, feel free to shoot them our way online.
I wish my parents had this when my mom taught me sex education, which she didn't really. She just showed me a science book.
Science book?
Of a image of a uterus. And she said, things happen here.
Oh, yeah. We have parent-child workshops, too. And a lot of times the parents are always like, oh, we never got taught this, so we didn't know how to talk to our children about it. And we actually use your article to get the conversation started.
Oh, that's like, awesome.
In our workshop.
The birds, the bees, and my hole.
The one where you're dropped off at the like movie theater. And your mom is just like, you have a hole.
Yeah.
So we use that as like the icebreaker for the entire workshop.
That's great.
Look at that. You're educating the masses with your hole.
Yeah, girl. Yeah, I am.
All right. Let's go to fatwas.
All right. I have a fatwa.
What's your fatwa?
Gender binaries.
What?
We should already fatwa gender binaries. But specifically because they have prevented me from learning how to properly loogie.
I don't know if that's a bad thing.
No, it is a totally bad thing because I should be able to just like go to the bathroom, hock a loogie, and come back here with a clear voice.
Yeah, because you've been sick this episode.
And I can't do that.
I guess, yes, you should be able to hock a loogie. But if you're like aiming that loogie at a person, I think that's bad.
I'm not going to hock a loogie in here.
Unless it's Trump. Anyone.
Unless it's Trump. You can hock
that loogies. That would be fine, Trump. Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't really see hocking loogies as a gendered thing.
Really?
Yeah.
No, because like guys always practice it all the time.
I didn't know that.
Can you hock a loogie?
No, but...
Okay. Can you hock a loogie?
Maybe. I was going to say, I think it's a cultural thing. Because in Singapore, it was like a regular thing. People hocking loogies and spinning on the floor. Yeah.
Everybody learned.
Yeah.
This is what happens when you're a part of a diaspora and then you're forced into a gender binary. You don't learn how to hock a proper loogie.
My fatwa is I was at the mosque for Eid prayer, and the girl sitting next to me, well, we were praying Eid prayer, and there was a girl who wasn't praying, and she was just sitting. And then, you know, girls don't pray when it's that time of the month, which I
say it
just assumed
when they're on their period.
But I don't want to assume that she was on her period.
Okay,
we just know that like she was sitting next to me. But then the whole time I was trying to like get spiritual and like enjoy the end of this month of this like prayer, this girl was just like Snapchatting the whole time. And I was just super annoyed because when I was a kid, I was like yelled at for wearing nail polish at the mosque. And this girl is just like straight up like on her phone Snapchatting, not like quietly, but just pretty like, to me, it felt like it was in my face because she was sitting next to me.
Like she was Snapchatting herself?
But she was Snapchatting people praying.
Without their consent.
Without their consent.
Like, that's not yeah. Cool.
And then we were talking about this. I was praying in the second row of the women's section and I was in the middle. So it wasn't even like I was sitting in the back. And then so I turned into the auntie. And after the prayer, I like turned to her and I said, "Salam alaikum." It was very distracting to my prayer when you were on Snapchat. And if you're going to do this in the future, you better sit in the back. And she was like, "Oh, okay." And then her mom.
Oh my God.
Oh, damn.
You are that auntie.
I turned into that auntie. I was like, this is not cool.
That totally would have been me, though, as
a kid.
What
did her mom say?
Her mom turned, was just like, what did she say? And then she's like, she told me not to be on my phone.
That's different than, like, don't be on Snapchat.
Yeah.
Like, you could be on your phone just, like, you know, whatever, doing whatever. But if it's, like...
I don't think... If you're going to be on your phone, just don't sit in the middle of prayer in front of everyone. Yeah. Just go to the back. No one's forcing you to sit next to...
Wait, that's really bold. So she's, like, in the front?
Yeah, we're in the second row in the middle.
And she's just going for it?
Yeah.
Man, I don't understand that kind of confidence.
I don't understand why you would come to Eid prayer to be on your phone.
Well, I mean, she's Snapchatting.
Well, that is what Eid prayer is now. I literally, like, right after the prayer, everybody goes on their phones and they're Snapchatting.
I'm okay with, like, I was doing that, you know? Like, I'm okay with taking pictures, celebrating, you know?
Yeah.
But, like, don't do it when people are praying. And don't take pictures of other people praying.
I mean, I would.
Praying.
I would be that kid. Yeah, I would be that kid that would, like, put the dog filter on everyone's butt so that as they're like
at what
bending.
Age though? What age would you be doing this at?
Like 38.
And I would be the auntie that would be yelling at you saying like that is disrespectful to those butts.
And welcome to Good Muslim, Bad Muslim. Here we are.
So my fatwa is basically to do with this program called Countering Violent Extremism.
Yeah.
And it's this program through Department of Homeland Security.
Which I have to say, Department of Homeland Security is also the department that's in charge of ICE,
mm-hmm.
which is dividing people at the borders. If you're upset with that, this is a connection that you need to keep in mind.
Absolutely. So Los Angeles has been a pilot city of this program for like many, many years. But recently the mayor's office is supposed to be getting a grant for like $500,000 from this program.
Whoa.
And so my fatwa is against anyone who thinks this is a good idea. Don't.
Just all people.
Just people and organizations and the mayor's office.
Yeah.
Wait, how are they getting this funding?
They applied for a grant under the Obama administration.
Through Homeland Security.
Through the Department of Homeland Security.
But what is the grant?
The grant is basically, here, Department of Homeland Security is giving out money to all of these like community-based organizations and law enforcement agencies and whatever. Literally anyone can apply for it. And they awarded $500,000 to the city of Los Angeles to do programming around like youth programming, mental health programming, to do research with like the RAND Corporation. And then I think there's like one or two other things that are listed, but most of them are focused on the Muslim community. And it's under the banner of countering violent extremism. So it's racist. It's like, oh, in order to counter violent extremism, let's give money to all these Muslims to like make sure that they have social services.
And the other thing that makes it problematic is that we don't know what kind of restrictions the DHS is going to be asking these programs to report back to the government. So if there's like a mental health situation where a therapist is talking to someone who's has ideations of becoming a terrorist and is trying to support them and work through it, they might be obligated to tell the DHS, and the DHS might send ICE officers and might try to deport them. They're, because of this connection to the government, there's all of these really problematic ways that things could play out that we just know are potentials, and we don't want that to be in place for that to happen.
Like, why would we put ourselves at risk?
Yeah.
Like, we're already at risk, and now you're basically putting a target on our back. And so I think that's a big problem. And we need social services. Don't get me wrong. Like, I'm a mental health professional. I want to have like money to offer mental health services to my community. But I'm not going to do it under the banner of countering violent extremism.
With money from the DHS.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I mean, this is McCarthyism, basically, you know, like reporting on communism or communist sympathizing or any kind of socialist inclinations. Like, you're putting people in a position where it's reinforcing that split between what is American and what is Muslim.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I akin it to COINTELPRO, where there's the surveillance program, which is being implemented through social service programs. So these social service programs are going to be watching you. And you won't even know how to speak honestly to mental health professionals if you're afraid that they're going to rat it out to the government. And then it's not really helpful anyways.
Well, and on top of that, I'm thinking about the ROI, right? The return on investment. Like, say that there isn't anything to report. You have to show for the money that you've put in. So, of course, they're going to be looking for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, this track record with this government has been so great.
I mean, yeah. So the CVE program as a whole, like the framework and the program itself, wasn't started under the Trump administration. It was started under the Obama administration. I mean, folks in our communities have been fighting this even under the Obama administration. But we just know that there's a very explicit Islamophobic agenda with the current administration.
Yeah.
That, like, there's no excuse. There's no excuse.
I think what was really interesting is when it was under Obama, there was a lot of people who were like, oh, well, only good can come out of this. And then as soon as Trump got elected, then everyone's like, wait a second, what happens when policies fall under the hands of dictators? And now people are kind of like stepping back, which is, I guess, kind of good because like people are like stepping back from CVE because now they're finally understanding what could happen. But there's still organizations that are wanting this money that shouldn't. Fuss with them.
I'm fatwaing you.
And what, if you're in LA, what can people do to fight this?
You can sign a petition that's circulating. We have over 1,000 signatures now, but go to the Vigilant Love website and you can sign the petition that will let the city council know not to approve the mayor's funds. You can also, if you're a part of an organization, sign on to our organizational sign-on letter. You can also join us for when we have actions. We recently went to city council and spoke to the city council as a whole to let them know that the community is opposed to this. You can also just contact Vigilant Love to get more involved in anti-CV organizing in general.
And if you're not in LA, there's a lot of organizations out there that are organizing around anti-CVE work. Minnesota is a state that's involved. I think New York and Massachusetts are involved as well.
Yeah, and now it's actually spread. And it's a lot of the programs focus and target Somali immigrant communities. It's also seeping into campuses and schools. So if you're a part of a university as a university student, keep a lookout for when CVE funding might be coming to your campus.
Oh, that's scary. Which is the theme of this presidency. Scary, 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 scary. Well, I'm glad you're here to shed a light on CVE.
Sahir, do you have an awkward ask a Muslim? This is a segment we do in all of our episodes.
I unfortunately do have an awkward ask a Muslim.
They always happen. What is yours?
So mine was, I just moved into a new place, and so I've been doing furniture shopping.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And we went to like a garage sale in Costa Mesa. I don't know why we went so far, but we were out there. And this older white dude comes up to me and Imran, my husband, and is like, well, where are you from? I'm like, I'm from here, the United States. And then Imran responds with, oh, our families are from Pakistan.
Oh, Imran.
And oh, then
such a nice, sweet man.
It's so annoying. And then the white guy continues with, oh, so do you speak Arabic? And I'm like, well, first of all, Pakistan is not an Arabic-speaking country. But no, we speak English. And he was like, oh, well, assalamu alaikum. And then I felt really bad because I was like, oh, he's trying to be nice. But then, like, 3 minutes later, he comes back to us and he goes, I'm really glad you're not armed.
What? You're like, how do you know what's under my hijab or not?
Oh, my God.
I was like, I was livid. And I just turned back to him and I'm like, yeah, most of us aren't. And then just walked away. But I was just like, okay, old white dude, like, that's ridiculous. And then he tried to, like, follow us and be like, I'm sorry, I guess that was offensive. And I'm like, no, like,
I guess.
I guess? So well, what if his next comment was going to be like, because I'm also about gun control.
Oh, my God. I mean, I've just had it. I really just had it with white people.
What the fuck? Yeah. I don't know how I feel about you telling him on behalf of all Muslims that we're not armed.
I know.
I said most of us. So some of us can't.
Armed to the teeth. I'm packing right now. I'm packing on my way home. What the fuck? That's a really good awkward ask a Muslim.
There you go. There you have it.
My awkward ask a Muslim happened at a house party. It was at a house party. I think I was on my way out of the house party. And it was a very diverse house party. But there were no brown people like me at the house party. And then this really hot brown guy walks in. And I was like, oh, he's pretty attractive. He, like, starts talking to me as I'm ready to leave. So I have my bags. I'm ready to go. Then somehow it came up. I think someone at the party talked about how I'm Bangladeshi. And then he looks at me and goes, oh, you're a little light-skinned for being Bangladeshi. And I was like, whoa, hold up here. Who are you? Why are you making comments about, like, my skin tone and whether it's Bangladeshi or not? And why is it always the hot guys that say inappropriate shit? I swear to God, like, that's, like, a continuous theme that I just feel like they feel entitled to be improper.
This is why I'm not attracted to hot men.
It turns out that he's actually half South Asian, half Persian. And
see?
Mm-hmm.
This is why you get my silence when you're, like, aren't you drooling over these hot Persian guys?
There you go. Well, I just want to drool. I don't want to talk to them, obviously,
right?
After this experience. And I think when I first told you this story, Zara, you're like, well, obviously he's Persian because that's where that skin comment came from. Because they feel entitled to say that. And then I ended up breaking down partition and colonization.
Oh.
I was just like, well, you know, Bangladesh is a delta and we're outside of India and he didn't know about partition. And I basically gave him a master class of history of South Asia because I was like, well, there are different kinds of skin tones in South Asia. And there was the Mughal dynasty and then there's the Crusades.
Oh,
and then there was...
Oh, my God.
Anyway, I had my bags. I was ready to leave. But, you know, like... I know my history. I'll get into it. If you, like, say stupid bullshit, I'm going to talk about white assimilationists and colonization. I gave him a history class. I was like, don't challenge me. I will drop major knowledge. I will not be able to get a date, but I will drop major educational knowledge.
But how annoying would it be to be with someone that's hot and stupid and, like,
don't talk about me while I'm here. I'm right here.
Yeah, I can't.
I mean, I could maybe be... I've been with some hot, dumb guys in the past. But, you know, you just have to, like, keep the conversation very superficial. You cannot go deep. Oh, they were so hot and dumb. Yeah, I definitely can't be with racist people. I've been with dumb people. I can deal with dumb, but I can't deal with people who
That's
are,
fair.
Like, super racist.
Well, I feel like for the Iranians out there that are listening, I feel like Iranians have a blind spot when it comes to race politics. They don't understand what white passing is.
It was just, I didn't understand how this person didn't understand that you're not supposed to comment about people's skin color like that.
Yeah, the way he did it is like a compliment almost.
He was like, oh, you're light skin. I was like, whoa, hold up.
Gross.
Hold up.
Gross guy.
That was my awkward ask.
All right. I have an awkward ask. I had to explain to my ENT that I've been binge eating.
That's your awkward ask?
It was really awkward.
Were you binge eating bacon?
No. Okay. So the last like 2-3 weeks that have been Ramadan, it's very triggering for me. And I've been eating with everyone in their iftars just at home by myself after midnight with a jar of
iftar's
peanut butter.
Iftar's not at midnight.
And you're also not supposed to feed a Zara after midnight. That's also a thing you should not do. I have a gallstone. And what that means is I'm old. And also, like, okay, this is something I was talking to one of my friends about how, like, as you get into your, like, later 30s, right, you start to realize, oh, the shit that I did when I was in my 20s, I could actually kill myself doing now.
Yeah, I cannot eat hot Cheetos anymore. I feel like I will kill myself if I eat hot Cheetos.
And then you mentioned like that thing about eating ramen for iftar and waking up in the morning.
I was so dehydrated. It was so salty. I can't do stupid stuff.
You can't do stupid stuff like hypertension. That's the thing that comes up. You have to deal with this shit. So I have a gallstone now from like eating so much fatty shit and, you know, yo-yo dieting and also lacrosse instead of water and kombucha instead of water. And so I have this big old gallstone. And that means low-fat diets. And I was up every night the last 2-3 weeks eating out of peanut butter and almond jars, making myself like sneaking toast with jam, tons of jam, so that like my husband wouldn't hear me rummaging through the pantry. Don't listen to this episode, honey. So then like when my doctor was like, I don't understand how, what do you mean you're sick? What do you mean you need antibiotics for your sinus? Because it sounds like I have the flu.
Yeah.
The symptoms that I had were like chills, fever, body aches. It was my gallstone. I had a gallstone attack. And I had to explain to him, well, I've been stress eating and now I need to not. He's like the Santa Claus of all ENTs. He was just like, oh, you and all of us.
Oh, so you're basically going to like have like a Ramadan now. You're going to fast from certain foods now, but it's just going to be permanent and forever.
Yeah, permanent forever, a gallstone
diet.
Happy Ramadan. Yay. Ugh, I have to get my gallbladder removed. Is this like exciting talk? For our podcast listeners, it's actually like really easy to do. They go through your belly button laparoscopically and they remove it and it looks like a used condom. That's what everybody says. Yeah. Boom. Gone.
Does it look like a stone? Belly
button. There's a big old stone in it.
So where's the condom?
And no, when they remove it, it looks like a used condom. It's like a little sack. It's a little sack.
So it's like a little hard, like stony thing.
Yeah. In it.
And then you'll be fine.
And then I have to watch what I eat because I won't process fats the same way. But otherwise, I'll be fine. Will I be fine? Listeners, let me know if I'll be fine.
Are you questioning how you ate chips for lunch now?
I had a Mrs. Fields ice cream sandwich and chips. So, yes, I'm questioning many things right now.
Well, how old are you?
28.
Yeah, you're good for a while.
Yeah.
A few years. When you hit your 30s, you should read this book called The Power of Habit.
I have heard you quote this book a very many times. I feel like I don't need to read it anymore. You're getting it in your podcast.
Yeah, just enjoy your life. Just enjoy your 20s. Enjoy your 20s for as long as you can because it's going to come and then it's going to hit you hard. It's going to be like a truck and then boom.
Good Muslim award time. Okay. This is also awkward for me because I'm cheering on someone who's not a member of my team.
No, but he's still like a brown hot man, so I think it's fine to cheer him on.
Mo Salah,
who is the superstar for this year's World Cup. I think he's out on injury, but he's apparently the most popular.
He's the most popular. He's super hot. And they have an amazing chant about him. You got to hear this.
Is not just Muslim, but he's outwardly Muslim. They're saying that and he plays for the Liverpool squad, that his being there is a form of fighting Islamophobia. So I thought that was really interesting, even though for the World Cup, he's playing for Egypt, not England.
What's your good Muslim award?
My good Muslim award is to Tan, Not just because his name sounds similar to Taz, but Tan is an awesome queer dude on Queer Eye, and I just binged it, and he's just awesome. He's cool. He's the one who does the fashion makeovers for everyone, and he'll just, like, listen to people and put on awesome outfits. One of the things that came up was that, you know, the guy that everyone loves, the Antonio guy, because he's really pretty, and he's the cook who doesn't know how to cook, but everyone, like, lets him cook because he's so pretty. Well, he said something, about, like, being in the South and how he doesn't really feel depression, and Tan goes, well, it's because you're white. And it was like, oh, yeah. Like, it was really cool to see them have that conversation in the car for that. But he's awesome.
Nice.
Go watch Queer Eye.
So my Good Muslim Award goes to the entire team that made the 15 Years Later short film.
It was so good. It premiered this week.
So 15 Years Later is a short film. So Manish Dayal wrote, directed, and acted in it. And this was his directorial debut. And it explores kind of 15 years after 9/11, an interaction that he has with, like, a white law enforcement officer. And we did an awesome panel on Wednesday that Taz was a part of and I moderated to talk to the filmmaker, Manish, as well as Matt McGorry, who's the white cop in the movie, and Dahlia, who is the founder of White People for Black Lives. And we talked about policing and Islamophobia,
anti-blackness,
toxic masculinity, all the good things. And so that's who my Good Muslim Award goes to, is the whole team that made this film that all of you can check out on our website. If you go to vigilantlove.org and go to 15 Years Later, you can watch the film and share it.
Yeah, please do. It's awesome. I think everyone should be making their own movies. This is part of the conversation we had on the panel, is that we shouldn't wait for other people to tell our stories. We need to just go out there and tell our own stories. And I'm looking forward to continuing to do that. Well, that's the end of our episode.
That's our show.
That's our show. I have to talk about No Muslim Ban Ever. The SCOTUS ruling is going to happen any day now. It's supposed to happen before the end of June. We didn't talk about it because it still hasn't happened yet. But for people who are listening to this episode, you will be hearing a ruling soon. So follow the hashtag No Muslim Ban Ever to see what's happening. There's definitely going to be rallies happening around. There's going to be events at 18 Million Rising. We will be doing a series of poems that we'll be sharing out. There's lots of actions going on. So please, please, please participate. And then another thing that I'm involved with, 18 Million Rising, is we've been working hard on a series called Right Back, Fight Back. I did an essay on being the other Asian, which just got posted up a couple weeks ago, and it talks about my history of being Asian American and how I explored becoming a South Asian activist. Please read my piece. Read everyone's piece. It's at rightbackfightback.com. I also have an essay out on Muslim Women Speak where I talk about going to Denny's and seeing a house fire. And that's it. I'm done for the month. I apparently did a lot of things for the past.
That's a hell of a list.
I did a lot of things. I was, remember how I said Ramadan, I didn't want to do anything? I ended up doing a lot of things. I performed a lot. I spoke a lot, but I don't
you
have
saved
any.
Saved lives.
I saved lives in the house fire. What do you have going on, Zara?
I am working on a new one-woman show. It's called On Behalf of All Muslims. You're welcome. It's a comedy special. I'm still debating over the title, whether it should be On Behalf of All Americans, On Behalf of All Muslims, but my beef is with the Muslim community right now. So it feels like I need to take back that, reclaim my space. As a queer, bisexual, married to an atheist, I'm not atheist. People always think I'm atheist. It doesn't mean I'm agnostic. No, I'm not secular. Show. I don't have a title for that yet. But that's the show I'm working on, and I'm going to be doing fundraising for it. So please keep an eye out. Join my newsletter so you can hear more about it.
And thank you to Sahar for being a guest on our show. Do you want to drop some plugs for you?
Yes. I have many plugs because I do many things. So follow Vigilant Love on Facebook, on Instagram. We have a Twitter that we're still trying to figure out how to use. follow Heart to Grow on all of our social media accounts as well. Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and we have a website as well. Share and download our resources online. And please, please, please watch 15 Years Later and yes. Spread it like wildfire.
Thank you for being on the show with us.
Thanks
for having me. Eid Mubarak, everyone.
Eid Mubarak. Eid Kareem. Happy Eid.
Eid is Mubarak. Happy Ramadan. Dun 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 dun. Iran.
Thanks for listening to the Good Muslim, Bad Muslim podcast, hosted by Taz Ahmed and Zara Norbash. You can follow Taz on Twitter at TazzyStar. That's TAZZYSTAR. And Zahra at Zahra Comedy. That's ZAHRA Comedy. The show is produced and edited by Quincy Sarah-Smith, and you can find us on the web at goodmuslimbadmuslim.com. To follow the conversation, please use the hashtag GoodMuslimBadMuslim. Good Muslim Bad Muslim is recorded at the Potluck Podcast Studio, located at Visual Communications. Visual Communications develops and supports the voices of Asian American and Pacific Islander media artists who empower communities and challenge perspectives. Some of their annual programs include the Academy Award qualifying Los Angeles Asian Pacific Film Festival, the Armed with a Camera Fellowship, and C3, the Conference for Creative Content. Learn more at vconline.org. Good Muslim Bad Muslim is a proud member of Potluck, a collective that features stories and voices from the Asian American community. And I would be the auntie that would be yelling at you saying, like, that is disrespectful to those butts.
And welcome to Good Muslim, Bad Muslim.